Canto 11, chapter 3, verse 31. Smaranta smarayantascha mito agauga harim haram harim bhaktya sanjataya bhaktyam vibrati utpalakam tanham Smaranta smarayantascha mito gauga haram harim bhaktya sanjataya bhaktyam vibrati utpalakam tanhum Smaranta smarayantascha Mito agauga haram harim Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktyam Vibrati utpalakam tanhum Remembering Smarayanta Cham and reminding Mitam one another Aga Oga Haram who takes away everything inauspicious from devotee. Harim, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhaktyam, by devotion. Sanjatayam, awakened. Bhaktyam, by devotion. Vibrati, possesses. Utpalakam, agitated by ecstasy. Tanum, body. The devotees of the Lord constantly discuss the glories of the personality of God among themselves. Thus, they constantly remember the Lord and remind one another of his qualities and pastimes. In this way, by their devotion to the principles of Bhakti Yoga, the devotees please the personality of Godhead, who takes away from them everything inauspicious. Being purified of all impediments, the devotees awaken to pure love of Godhead. And thus, even in this world, their spiritual bodies exhibit symptoms of transcendental ecstasy, such as standing of the bodily hairs on end. The word Aga Uga Haram is very significant in this verse. Aga refers to that which is inauspicious or sinful. The living entity is actually Satchitananda Vigraha, or eternal and full of bliss and knowledge. But by neglecting his eternal relationship with Krishna, the personality of Godhead, he commits sinful activities and undergoes the inauspicious result in the form of material suffering. The chain of sinful reactions is called Oga, or relentless wave of suffering. Krishna is Aga Uga Haram Harim. He takes away the sinful reactions of his devotees, who are thus entitled to experience the inconceivable bliss of the kingdom of God even while remaining in this world. The words Bhaktya Sanjataya Bhaktya indicate that there are two divisions of Bhakti Yoga, Sadhana Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti. Srila Prabhupada has elaborately explained in his book The Nectar of Devotion the progress of the devotee from Sadhana Bhakti, or the execution of regulative principles, to Raganuga Bhakti, or service executed in love of Godhead. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, a liberated soul is always enthusiastic due to the appearance of transcendental ecstasy within his body. Thus, he always aspires to remain overwhelmed in chanting the glories of the personality of Godhead, Hari. Smaranta smarayanta cha mito aga aga haram harim bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya vibrati utalakam tanum. The devotees of the Lord constantly discuss the glories of the personality of Godhead among themselves. Thus they constantly remember the Lord and remind one another of his qualities and pastimes. In this way, by their devotion to the principles of Bhakti Yoga, the devotees please the personality of Godhead, who takes away from them everything inauspicious. Being purified of all impediments, the devotees awaken to pure love of Godhead. And thus, even in this world, their spiritualized bodies exhibit symptoms of transcendental ecstasy, such as standing or the bodily hairs on end. Om Janata Mirandasya Ganjana Shrataya Chakshurma Kamyena Kasma Shivarayana Namaste Saraswati Devi. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripasunibhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So, in this verse we are following the discussion between King Mimi inquiring from Navayugendras, the sons of Rishabhadev, who were great sages. So the initial conversation, as we know, started. King Mimi was inquiring about the illusory energy. He was saying, can you please explain to me what it is, how does it work? Because all the living entities in this material world are so bewildered by the illusory potency of the Lord. So then one of the Navayugendras, I believe Antarananda, he was describing that the Supreme Lord, basically, he activates the material elements along with the senses of the all material senses of the living entities. And thus, all the living entities, when they arrive to the material realm, they basically have a freedom to express their desire. And material creation is described as the facility for the living entities. They can cultivate the sense enjoyment, or they can cultivate liberation, or they can aspire for the liberation. So the Lord gives that freedom to every one of us to choose how to utilize our time, energy, and based on that, we can see that the Lord is unlimitedly compassionate, but at the same time, he does not interfere in the free will of the living entity. So then we see the further verses. They describe the living entity foolishly tries to find happiness in this material world from life to life, and then ultimately gets entangled in the cycle of birth and death. By performing the fruitive activities, he's forced to take a birth after birth after birth after birth and try again and again. So, and then there is a description that ultimately the material world comes to end. This universe is not permanent home for the jiva. So it goes through those cycles of creation. You know, it lasts for some time, and then there's destruction. There are verses describing how at some point towards the end of the material creation, the heat of the sun is so strong for hundreds of years, the temperature rises and everything dries up, and the universe starts to burn, and then there are torrential rains that flood the universe. It is described that the drops of rain, they become like trunks of elephant. Can you imagine that kind of storm? Probably would be category maybe 15 hurricane compared to, you know, Matthew, it would be nothing. So that is the reality. This world is temporary place. But due to our nature, as described in this verse, the living entity is such ananda, we have the tendency to search for that place of eternal bliss and pleasure. So then Maharaj Nimi, he goes on, and, you know, after, you know, hearing all those descriptions from Antarananda, he says, then please tell me, what is the solution? How to get out of this material world? And then the description goes on. One cannot find permanent happiness even on the heavenly planets, which one can attain in the next life by ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices. Even in material heaven, the living entity is disturbed by the rivalry with his equals and envy of those superior to him. And since one's residence in heaven is finished with the exhaustion of pious fruitive activities, the denizens of heaven are afflicted by fear, because they know after all these pious activities are gone, they have to return again to the lower planetary systems. So it's described, it's like a king. You know, the king is so, you know, elevated position in this world, and you would think he is happy possessing all the wealth, you know, all the army that he can rule and command. But no, king is usually, most of the time, very fearful. You know, who will, you know, try to conquer me? And, you know, who will attack me? So there is constant fear. So similarly, even in the heavenly planets, while the living entity is enjoying, he's aware that eventually that facility for heavenly pleasures will end, and then going back to the, you know, lower planetary systems. So, so then the answer comes to King Nimi, and it says, therefore, any person who seriously desires real happiness must seek bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of bona fide guru is that he has realized the conclusions of the scriptures by deliberation and is able to convince others of those conclusions. Such great personalities who have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, should be understood to be bona fide spiritual masters. So that is the solution. And then the verses go on explaining how one should associate with devotees. And finally, in this verse, he's saying, what are the activities of those personalities who have realized, you know, this is not place to remain, as Prabhupada would say, this material world is not place for ladies and gentlemen. So in this verse, we see it is described that devotees stay constantly engaged in hearing and chanting and discussing the pastimes of the Lord. So, and then it's said that by doing that, then they are able to remember, which is kind of like you can find a parallel line, you know, in our devotional practice, Shravanam, Kirtanam, and then Smaranam comes. So first we have to hear, then we chant, and then we are able to, after absorbing and, you know, soaking our consciousness with pastimes of the Lord, then we can remember the Lord. So the verse is saying, thus they constantly remember the Lord and remind one another of his qualities and pastimes. Now we know Lord has how many qualities? Thank you. And then out of 64, there are four which are not prominent in, not even in demigods like Lord Shiva or Brahma or Vishnu. So what are those four qualities? Thank you. So to summarize, so the Lord performs pastimes which no other, you know, demigod or not even Lord Vishnu does. Therefore it's a unique quality. Then he plays his flute, which is so attractive, it is described, can attract all the living entities in the universe by just the sound of his flute. And then he is surrounded by loving devotees who are very, very special personalities, pure devotees of the Lord, are very unique. And then his beauty, it is described that Krishna's beauty is uncomparable to anything else. So these are the, like Prabhu said, Krishna has many qualities, but these are the most prominent ones. And then what to speak about the pastimes. I was asking my daughter this morning how many pastimes Krishna has. And she was smart. She says, unlimited. Unlimited. And there's always new and new pastimes. And therefore, there's so much for the devotee to relish. So much transcendental joy. So the verse goes on to explain devotion to the principles of Bhakti Yoga. Now, when we say devotion to the principles of Bhakti Yoga, we can understand that indicates the necessity of this sadhana bhakti, which eventually will lead on to the higher levels of Raghunuga Bhakti. So, interestingly enough, I was kind of searching, like, you know, principles of Bhakti Yoga, there's many. I was asking one devotee, tell me one principle of Bhakti Yoga. And the devotee said, to always remember the Lord and never forget the Lord. Which is true. You know, nobody can argue with that. That is one of the principles. But in the act of devotion, we find Srila Prabhupada writes, the most essential principles, basically there's 20 of them. And out of that, I'm going to kind of summarize. Out of the 20 main principles, there are three principles that are most essential. And one of them is to take shelter of the spiritual master, to take initiation, and to serve the spiritual master. These three are the most essential, which amazingly we can see that is exactly what the sage is telling to King Nimi, to take shelter of the spiritual master. And by doing so, the door opens wide for the progress of this living entity to further advance in the spiritual life. As we know, Brahmananda Brahmatikon, Bhagavan Ji, Guru Krishna Prasad, Bhakti Tilanta Payabij. So after many, many lifetimes, we finally get this opportunity to take a shelter of the pure devotee and follow his instructions. So then the verse goes on explaining, being purified of all impediments, the devotee awakens to the pure love of Godhead. And in the purport we also heard that the Lord is basically looking to remove the obstacles on the path of the devotee. Chaitanya Charan Prabhu has one nice quote. He said, you should create roads but not roadblocks on the path of devotion. So we can see the, you know, on one side there is endeavor from the Vaishnava, you know, aspiring to develop love of Godhead. But that's, you know, just one part of the puzzle. We definitely need assistance from the other devotees. We need mercy from the Lord. And here it is said that Krishna is known as Aga Uga Haram Harim. He takes away the sinful reactions of his devotees who are thus entitled to experience the inconceivable bliss. So there is a very interesting example we find that kind of illustrates this point, and I want to share with you. In the early pastimes of Lord, at one point, Vrijabasis, they were going for a pilgrimage. I think they were doing Shivaratri, and then they were coming back. And at that point, Krishna rescued Maharaj Nanda from that horrible serpent that was trying to swallow Nanda Maharaj. So after that incident, Krishna and Balaram decided to perform pastime Rasa Lila with gopis in Raj. And it was a beautiful autumn evening, and the jasmine flowers were, you know, blossoming, and the bumblebees were going totally intoxicated by the aroma of the flowers. So it is described that Krishna and Balaram, they were singing so beautifully for the pleasure of the gopis. And it is described that while they were singing, they were not only singing like, you know, one note at a time, like, you know, we would sing like, you know, one note. Like, it is described that their voices, they were capable of singing like whole different notes at the same time. It sounded like a, you know, almost like a big orchestra, like performing, but in transcendental way. So they were trying to please the gopis. And then all of a sudden, there is, one wicked demon appears, Shankachuda. And that particular demon, he was very, very arrogant because he had a special jewel that he was wearing. And because of his opulence, he was so puffed up. So when he came to that scene, he thought like, oh, look at this, who are these Krishna and Balaram? He dancing with the gopis, all these beautiful gopis, they should be with me. So he tried to forcibly take them away. And the gopis, they started, crying to Krishna, Krishna, Balaram, please save us. So Krishna and Balaram, they immediately grabbed, the wood, stick or branch or something. And they chased the rascal demon. And when he saw them, it is explained that like he felt like personified time and death together are approaching. And he was right. he had a good reason to be fearful. So the Lord Shiva, they chased him away. And Krishna said, you stay here with the gopis and I will get him. And Shankachuda, he was running and running and running. But who can run from the Lord? The Lord is in our heart. And the foolish demon couldn't even realize that. So he was thinking that, he can save himself by running. He was thinking that, by his power, by his opulence, that he can do something to prevent the calamity that he placed himself. So finally Krishna caught him and, easily just, with one stroke he killed him. And he took the jewel. And when he came back, he delivered the jewel to the Balaram. He didn't want gopis to be jealous of each other. So he gave it to Balaram. So the story goes on. It's just the beginning. It kind of gets more intricate. Basically, that jewel later on was given to Srimati Radharani, and then she gave it to Suryadev, and then later on Suryadev gave it to Satrajit, which we know the story about Shyamantaka jewel. So the reason I'm mentioning this story, in this story with Shyamantaka jewel, we find two very interesting characters, Satrajit and Jambavan, as you all, I'm sure, know the story. So what happened? One day, Satrajit, he comes to Dwaraka, and all the citizens of Dwaraka, they think it's the sun god because of his, shiny effulgence. They thought like, we know that, demigods come to visit the Lord. So they immediately went to inform Krishna, and they said, my dear Lord, and it's described in Krishna book, they actually addressed him, dear Lord Vishnu, and they were offering prayers, of course. So they said, you are the cause of all cosmic manifestation, and but you appeared this time in the Vraj as the son of, as the Damodar. They actually addressed him as Damodar, which is kind of appropriate for this time of the year. So they said, but you are famous as Damodar because Madhurya Yashoda tied you with the rope. And then they said, you are known as Govinda because you protect cows. And also you are Yadunandan, being that he was born from Vasudev in the Yadu dynasty. So, in that very pleasant way, they informed the Lord and they said, there is a sun god coming to visit you. And Krishna was just playing chess and he was listening. and he said, no, that's not sun god. That's a Satrajit. And but the strange thing, you would think Satrajit is coming to see the Lord. You would think like, why would otherwise, you would think the devotee normally wants to go see the Lord. But no, he actually, He arrived at Dwarka and he arranged for the Brahmanas to worship the jewel. And that particular jewel has a amazing powers. It is described that just by worshipping the jewel, one achieves 170 pounds of gold per day. Now, I did some research, believe it or not, I was curious how much that would be in the present day. And actually, I found the answer, 170 pounds of gold equals roughly about $3,107,000 and some change. So just imagine, $3 million per day, if you multiply that by 30, it equals roughly about 93 million in a month. So any of you would like to have income like that, 93 million in a month, not bad. So I don't think even the richest people in this world can have that kind of opulence. But Shyamataka jewel was so powerful that it was producing so much gold. So when Krishna heard, you know, what's going on, he actually told Satrajit, look, you know, King Ugrasena is the most worshipable person here. You should deliver the jewel to him. Then everybody will benefit. You know, it will be in the city, and you reside here. You will also reap the benefit of that. But Satyajit was so attached, and even he is born in Yadu dynasty, which is very interesting, which tells us how dangerous the opulence could be. You know, if it's not utilized in the Lord's service, it could blind the soul. So Satyajit, he kind of rejected in a polite and subtle way, but he didn't want to follow the Lord's instruction. So anyhow, the time goes on, and as we know, later on, his brother, Prasena, he took the jewel and he was kind of going on the ride to the forest, exploring, and he took the jewel. I was listening to Radhanand Maharaj telling the story, and he was saying, like, it's so funny, like, how the material world attracts, you know, all kind of people who are not really your well-wishers. So his brother, you know, he just wanted to show up the opulence and his, you know, family wealth. So he took the jewel and he was walking through the city and, you know, trying to show up, you know, kind of how opulent he is. And Radhanath Swami made a joke. And just see, like, if he just placed Kunti Mala instead of the jewel, like, you know, he wouldn't end up, you know, being killed later on. As we know, the story goes on. He ends up going to the forest, and the big lion kills him. And later on, there was a fight between a lion and Jambavan. And Jambavan is a great devotee of the Lord as well. It is described that Jambavan is actually devotee of Lord Ram. And he's so powerful. I'm not sure if I have time to tell more details about Jambavan, but it is described that he is actually, when Lord Ram decided to come to this world, he invited all the demigods to expand to assist him in that battle. So Lord Brahma, actually, he manifested as a Jambavan. And he was so powerful that he fought for Lord Ram, and he lived long, long life. So now Lord Krishna is performing pastimes, and so when that incident happened, Jambavan, with no problem, he just, you know, with one slap, he killed the lion, and he took the jewel. So he takes the jewel to the cave, and he just gives it to his boy. Now we can see the difference, you know, devotee like Jambavan, he didn't, you know, try to get the gold out of it. He felt like, oh, my child can play with it. So he gave it to his son. In meanwhile, in Dwaraka, Satyajit, he starts spreading the rumor, because he was, again, that the greed blinded him. So he started spreading the rumor that Krishna actually killed my brother. And he was telling all the citizens. And so people were talking, you know, not all, it is described that only those people who had ill motivations, they were listening to Satyajit. But few devotees, they were just avoiding him. So Krishna decided he needed to put some clarification to all this. So finally, he ends up going to search for Prasena, and he finds him, and he first finds the dead body of Prasena. He finds the lion being killed by Jambavan, and then he sees the tunnel, you know, where the cave is. So he tells all the Dwarka residents, "You stay here, and I will go alone to search for the jewel." And he goes inside, and he sees a little boy playing, you know, joyfully. And so he approaches the boy because, you know, he needs the jewel to bring it back so that everybody would understand what's going on. And in the meantime, the babysitter lady, she screams. And Jambavan, he immediately shows up, you know, thinking like, who is this daring to, you know, disturb my child playing? And he starts fighting really heavily with the Lord. And initially he doesn't recognize the Lord. So he fights, and, you know, it's described they fought with the weapons. Then they tried, you know, they were throwing the rocks and trees on each other. And then eventually they were just, you know, like, you know, beating with their fists, you know, heavily. And but the battle was so intense that it went for like 28 days. No sleeping, no eating, no break, just fighting. So the acharyas, they described that actually in this case, the Lord wanted to fight. So it was actually his desire. And therefore he selected one of his devotees because, you know, he could have killed Jambavan if he wanted. You know, same like he did with the other guys. So, Satyajana, the initial one that... Satyajana, yeah. So in this case, we can see the difference, how he dealt with each living entity differently. So he fights, and eventually when the Lord was pleased by this fight, he actually enables Jambavan to realize. And then Jambavan, he feels all fatigued from the fight, and he understands, "Oh my Lord, please forgive me. I did not recognize who you are. And now I understand. You are my Lord Ram appearing again in this yuga." And he offers beautiful prayers. And, you know, just to please the Lord, Jambavan, he immediately offers his daughter Jambavati in marriage. And he also gives Lord a locket with the jewel. Like, no any questions. He immediately delivers the jewel. So the Lord comes back, and he tells everybody what happened, and he gives the jewel back to Satyajit. Now the Satyajit, he is so embarrassed. You know, first of all, he made a fool of himself and accusing the Lord. So he feels guilty, and he tries to rectify the situation. So he also offers his daughter, Satyabhama, in the marriage, and the jewel. But the Lord, knowing the heart of Satyajit, he accepts Satyabhama, but he tells Satyajit, "I don't need this jewel," and he gives him back. So Satyajit, it is described actually that in his heart, he really didn't want to give the jewel because of the attachment, but he just felt obliged. And as the time progresses, and I'm running out of time, so I'm going to try to conclude this. As the time goes on, we hear later on that Krishna and Balaram, they end up going to Hastinapur because Akrura informed them that Pandavas, they've been in, Duryodhana made an evil you know, attempt to kill them by burning them in the house of the lark. So everybody believes Pandavas were killed, although Krishna knows different. So anyhow, they leave for Hastinapur, and while they were away, there was a plot in Dwaraka, and Satyajit actually gets killed, and the jewel gets stolen. So anyhow, it's a very intricate story, and it has many fine points, but the main thing what we're trying to focus here is we can see how Lord, He gives all the facility for the devotee to understand Him. And but He doesn't interfere with the free will. So in the case of Satyajit, he told him, you know, right at the beginning, just give the jewel to King Ugrasena. And Satyajit should have done that. He should have understood that would please the Lord and everybody would benefit. But instead of the holding on to his attachments, basically he ends up taking a different route, which eventually ends up in catastrophe for himself. So it's very interesting to compare the two mentalities of Jambavan, who basically was able to understand the Lord, even though in the beginning he wasn't. By pleasing the Lord, it's described that by fighting, Jambavan was actually doing service. So by that service, he pleased the Lord, and he was able to understand the real identity of the Lord. So it's very interesting to compare the two, their consciousness. And now the final point in the purport, we find that it is said that being purified of all impediments, the devotees awaken to pure love for Godhead. And thus, even in this world, their spiritual bodies exhibit symptoms of transcendental ecstasy, such as standing of the bodily hairs on end. And then also in the purport it says, such devotees always aspire to remain overwhelmed in chanting the glories of the personality of God. And that's very interesting, because we can see that example in our Srila Prabhupada. We can see that eagerness to share Krishna consciousness with all of us, and we can see that eagerness and his taste for chanting was incredible. So, I will just tell you one more thing and we will conclude. One time, Srila Prabhupada was in Germany, and after the discussion with devotees and, you know, giving the class, Srila Prabhupada was, you know, taking small rest in his room. And at that time, our Satchinandan Swami was a young devotee. And so he actually climbed on the back window. He was curious to see what Srila Prabhupada was doing. And Satchinandan Swami said, like, you know, of course nowadays he would never have done this. But back then he was young and, you know, curious boy. And so he climbed in the window to, you know, peek and see what Srila Prabhupada is doing. And he saw Srila Prabhupada was lying on a bed with his japa beads. And even though he was resting, Satchinandana Swami could see, like, the beads were moving. And, like, you know, from time to time he could hear, like, Ram, Ram, Krishna, Krishna. Like, you know, very, very soft chanting. Because Prabhupada was resting, but the chanting was still there. So I find that story really, really beautiful, and I just want to share with you. And as we can see in this verse, how pure devotee is always eager to be absorbed and continuously chant and hear about the Lord. So thank you so much for all your attention and blessings. If anybody has any comments, a question, we can try to answer. Maybe you can please say something.
Because that line, I find every Acharya commented. Even in our temple, whoever is familiar with the sloka, they quote this verse randomly. Bhakta Sanjataya Bhakta. This is the famous verse. I mean, today's verse. So, little bit. Because yesterday I was reading the Damodar Leela, where it is very interestingly says the third verse, Iti Driksha Leela Virananda Kunde Saghosam Nimajjantam Akhyapayantam. So there's a key is given that as a follower of Mahaprabhu and Prabhupada, we should, when we focus on the Supreme Absolute Truth, then our submission becomes easy, because He is great and He is original Father, Supreme Being, He is everywhere. All this opulence knowledge we hear, submission for us becomes very easy. And that should be the primary things in the beginning of sadhana bhakti, as at the purpose. And then it will build a bridge as we practice sadhana. There is that our focus will transform from greatness to His sweetness. Because as more we surrender, then anarthas and impurities will slowly, slowly disappear. And then this greatness, when it turns into sweetness, then affection for the Lord will arise or appear in the heart. That is spontaneous. So very well purport made, the line, Bhakta Sanjataya Bhakta. So then question rise by Jiva Goswami Pada that, should we focus, what about if we focus on the sweetness part of the Lord, then automatically affection will rise. Why do we have to go so much study about understanding this to remove the anarchos? Then he said, that is what sahajya will turn into. Without submission, just focus on the sweet pastime will not purify the heart. So submission. So it's very nice that sadhana bhakti should be focused by greatness of the Lord and His importance of the devotee, then automatically to turn into sweetness will cause affection automatically.
Thank you. Thank you for elaborating on that. Yeah, it's beautiful to see that connection, like the verse is saying, devotion to the principles of bhakti yoga. Because as we know, initially in our beginning stage, we cannot, you know, unless, you know, in rare cases, but most of us, we cannot have immediate devotion to the Lord. But we can have a devotion to the principles of sadhana bhakti. We can have a devotion to our spiritual master, which eventually will bring us to the next level. So it's beautiful to see the connection as the final goal.
I was thinking like, because sometimes even so many times I thought, why not every devotee is happy in Krishna consciousness? Why they have to draw pleasure from material outside instead of inside? Why outside? Prabhupada says, the transcendentalist means they draw pleasure from within. And he quoted this verse, Bhagavad Gita 5:21. Bindati atmani jat sukham, sa brahma yoga yukta atma, sukham akshayam asnute. This is an unending happiness, which Prabhupada was exhibiting himself, that he was always happy. In Holland, Amsterdam, that Prabhupada was, some or other had a grave faces for 3 days, and the devotee thought something went wrong, something not right, so they approached Prabhupada. Is everything okay, Prabhupada? So yes. So we feel like you are very serious and like great. Said, I'm so happy, I'm trying to control. So that's why. So, but funny, Rajendra Nandan Prabhu, Prabhupada's disciple, he took Prabhupada's photo, that photo, to a psychologist in San Diego. He told us. And the psychologist, first thing he says, who is this man? So he's my spiritual master. So he's not happy. So my point is, materially, psychology, they cannot understand the spiritual happiness. So then I was trying to trigger, now I was talking, went to Chaitanya Charitamrita, what causes this? He says, because in the beginning, we should actually dive into surrendering process. More than any other thing, surrendering. Because mind will not allow. Once the mind is purified, then the happiness will start, then automatically everything else will take place. Then devotee will not look for happiness outside. And that is required.
Thank you so much. Tarantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.